Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. I'd like to welcome you to our session this morning. My name is Andrea Milligan, and I am the convener for this session. I'd like to remind everyone, if you have the opportunity to fill out the evaluation forms, information is available in your program. NeuroComp and EDUCAUSE really values your feedback, so please take a moment today or later on this week to fill out the session evaluation and the conference evaluation. The session this morning is on passive to active, turning the classroom around, and I'd like to turn it over now to our guests from Boston University, and I'll first turn it over to Rebecca Kessler.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming. We're excited to be here, and thank you to our online audience. I'm Rebecca Kessler. I'm the Curriculum Technology Manager at the Boston University School of Management. I'll be presenting some work that we've done together along with...
Hi, my name is David Ryson. I'm a sophomore at Boston University School of Management. I took LA 245, which is the class that we're going to be discussing, both as a student and as a technology consultant.
And my name's Cabrina Chang. I'm an assistant professor at the School of Management. I taught the LA 245 in the new tech studio where David was my technology consultant.
Great. So today what we're going to talk about is we're going to go through a short case study of Cabrina's LA 245 class. So in a couple minutes, she's going to give us an overview of what that class entails and how she taught it originally and how she's teaching it now. The catalyst for the case study is really a new classroom that we built at the School of Management. So I'm going to first give you an overview of our we call it the Digital Learning Studio. So what the Digital Learning Studio is, why it's different from a standard classroom, and the challenges and benefits that involves for professors and students in the room. And then Cabrina is going to give you an overview of her class and an introduction to how she taught it in a standard classroom, and then the changes that she's made as she's teaching it in our new studio classroom. And then we're going to talk about assessing the effectiveness of the classroom and of the course in the classroom, and that's a lot where David comes in. He can give us a great student perspective of the room. And then we'll go over some of the challenges of the classroom space and some of the lessons that we learned and our goals for moving forward. So this is our Digital Learning Studio. The picture on the top up here, this is what the classroom looked like originally. You can see it's a very standard classroom. Everybody's in rows. You're lined up behind a desk. There's just a big blackboard. Nothing really fancy about the room. The goal of the building project was to create a collaborative space where students could work together. They could solve problems in real time, investigate real-world issues, really have more of an active, experiential learning environment rather than a passive lecture professor at the front of the room kind of environment. So these are all the before pictures. This is the construction picture. Oh, on the bottom, construction. This is the after picture. This is what the room looks like now. It's very technologically enhanced. We have an interactive whiteboard. That's what this is. We have a large display screen here. There are six of these team tables with seven seats around each table. Each of the tables also has a computer right next to it mounted onto the wall. One of the great things about the room is that we have the ability to display what's on one screen on any of the other screens around the room. There's laptop hookups at each table, so students can hook up their laptops or their iPads or whatever they have, and they can project their laptop onto their table computer. They can also project their laptop screen onto any of the other table computers around the room. So it's really helpful for collaboration, for presenting material to the rest of the class, and for seeing what other people are working on. And then we have some other technological capabilities in the room. We have Apple TV in the room. We have telepresence capability in the room. We have a lot going on. But you can really see here, and here also, students are sitting around small tables. Everybody's not in the front facing forward anymore. They're sitting around tables. They're face-to-face with each other, and that really enhances the collaboration ability of the room. So these are some quotes for you from professors and students. Students have enjoyed the new level of engagement and participation that the room involves, that because they're sitting around facing each other. Professors have also really enjoyed it. They see their role as becoming more of a facilitator rather than a lecturer, so that sage on the stage idea, they're off to the side now. And they seem to enjoy that, but they also recognize that this is a lot of work and challenges them when they're writing their syllabi and when they're writing their curriculum, that this is a different way to teach. And so faculty that haven't taught this way before can see that as kind of a challenge. It does take a lot of time for them, but they're very excited about it, and so we're glad to see that. Now I'm going to hand it over to Cabrina, and she's going to give us her perspective as a faculty member going from a standard lecture room to this more collaborative room.
Thank you, Becky. Thank you. As Becky said, I'm an assistant professor at Boston University, and I teach, one of the classes I teach is Introduction to Business Law. It's a required class for any student who's graduating from the School of Management, generally, it's sophomore and up level. It's a required class, so there are lots of sections of it. I've had sections as big as 63 students. I would have loved a section as small as 45, but we probably have 11 or 12 of these things going every semester. So it's a lot of students. I have always taught the class in a standard lectured format. I never even use PowerPoint slides. This was my old classroom, 60 students, stadium seating, as Becky described, with all of their laptop screens and the back of those screens facing me. I, of course, had no idea. I suspected what was going on those computers, but this is how I did it and, frankly, how I liked it. I was very much not a proponent of PowerPoint. I didn't even use PowerPoint. I used the chalkboard. And part of my reason for not using PowerPoint was I liked the interaction. I thought PowerPoint was an obstacle between me and my students. I liked them to be looking at me. I liked to be looking at them. I had some delusion that this created engagement and a better relationship and sort of normal, intelligent conversation with my students. Very traditional class. They read a chapter a week, so 35 to 40 pages a week. We came into class, we talked about it. We talked about the cases, we talked about current events, and because it's a law class, it's very easy to incorporate current events. Very straightforward assessments. I was not at all very creative. We had two exams, a paper, sometimes two papers, and I had one in-class team project that the students always really enjoyed. But that was it. It was really incredibly low-tech, incredibly straightforward, and like I said, I liked it that way. Then, right before Becky came to BU, Becky's relatively new at BU, I got a bug in my ear about using podcasts, and some of the material in my course is very straightforward memorization, I worked with some of our IT people to get me set up in my office with a webcam and Echo 360 software to do podcasts. So I would sit in my office, which I felt kind of silly doing, but I would sit in my office and just sort of deliver a straightforward lecture on the very sort of boring rote stuff from class so we wouldn't have to talk about it in class. And this was maybe a year ago. This was my first foray into using technology. Then Becky came to BU, and I was asked if I would be willing to teach one of my sections in a high-tech studio. And this was as high-tech as I ever got, but I thought, why not? What do I have to lose? You know, it'll be interesting. Why not? I didn't even see the studio, so then I went down and saw it and thought, oh, it's completely different. I didn't really know what to do with any of it. I didn't know how to adapt my material. Thankfully, Becky was here. And she and I met for probably 3 weeks straight. I gave her my syllabus, and I gave her my book. And I said, please help me, because I don't know how to do this. I don't know what I'm doing. I am very kind of traditional. So Becky worked long and hard, and she came to me with all of these ideas. And I thought all of these ideas sounded great, but I couldn't visualize them. I couldn't figure out how my material would work and all these great high-tech ideas that she had. So finally I said, listen, I'm going to give you chapter 20 on securities. It's very straightforward. It's very rule-oriented. There isn't a lot of kind of philosophical debate going on. In other words, it's a relatively boring chapter, but there's a lot of good sort of current event stuff going on. I'm going to give you this chapter, and I'm going to give you, I don't even know how long I gave you, 3 days, maybe 4 days I gave her. You come to me with a bunch of different assignments that are equipped for this room because I can't make the connection between what you're telling me and what I do. So poor Becky worked for 4 days on this very boring chapter, and we met in the room, and she had 5 different group assignments, all different group assignments using all of this technology applied to this chapter. And I could not have made this transition without her, because I didn't know about technology, and she didn't necessarily know about the substance, but she quickly learned it and came up with great, great, great assignments. And so based on my conversation with her, I could see that at the very beginning, it was a total change in my mindset. I had to redefine my role as facilitator instead of lecturer. And to be perfectly honest, working with Becky, I could see that the biggest hurdle was actually changing my mindset. And so I know many of you work with faculty and maybe would like to work with faculty more. There was no real change in the substance. It was just a change in the delivery. And you guys have all the creative ideas. I had 0 creative ideas. Becky came to me with all of the creative ideas, but once she walked me through them, all different kinds of light bulbs went off in my head about different ways that I could use this. So the first thing we did was go over my syllabus and look at the deliverables and try and move some of those things around, just tweak them a little bit. We still have a paper because we should have a paper. We still have exams because of course we have exams. But now we have a blog. Now we have different table presentations. And now the really great thing about it is we have different in-class research projects. And this is where Becky, like I said, was incredibly instrumental. So here are just a couple of pictures of me interacting in this classroom. And as you can see, I'm totally in these students' faces. And David will talk about more of the impact of the professor being in your face. But they're using their individual boards. I use the whiteboard. I run the whole class off my iPad because we have Apple TV. So I do keynote slides, and I have my textbook on my iPad, which from a faculty perspective is awesome because I don't have to lug around my big, heavy textbook. And I don't write on the board. I have no notes. I have it all on the slides and all in their group presentations, which is a total 180 for me. But Becky made it incredibly easy because she had all of these creative ideas. We'll talk about the awkwardness of the class later because there are some challenges. But it's incredibly interactive. So in these two pictures, the students are working on in-class research assignments that I gave them that, of course, Becky clued me into how to do them. She clued me into the form of them. I filled in the substance. So these students are working on Fourth and Fifth Amendment issues. And I thought in altering the delivery of my material, I used what I traditionally have as sort of what are the learning objectives I want them to get from different things that we talk about. And when we talk about crime and the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, there are generally 2 or 3 things I want them to take away from each. So I thought, instead of me telling them these 2 or 3 things, I'm going to assign 1 thing per table, and I'm going to make them find it. So, for example, these kids were doing the Fifth Amendment and Miranda, or Miranda warnings, which none of us know firsthand what they are, but we all watch Law and Order, so we know what they are. There are 3 important things that they have to get from this. I gave them the concept and a case, and they had to go look up the case and tell us what the case said about these concepts, but then they also have to go find the definition of these concepts. So this table in particular was doing custody. What does custody mean? And this table had to do what does interrogation mean? So they had a case that I gave them on custody, which coincidentally is a Rhode Island case. But then custody means something. So they had to do all kinds of research outside of just regurgitating what the case said, and then they had to put it all together for us. And students all around the class were doing the same thing, but on different topics. I found that it was very effective, super interesting. We got into a lot more material than I thought we would, a lot more in-depth than I thought we would. So this change of mindset, for me, was the biggest obstacle. Coming up with the in-class activities, oh, wait, before we get to my movie, coming up with the in-class activities was easier than I thought because Becky and I worked absolutely 100% as a team, but required a lot more upfront work, and we'll talk about that in a second. How do I get the movie going? Oh, Here's the movie.
Remember, I said in this country we have this thing called the single recovery theory. The single recovery theory, which means we all have to bring this in one lawsuit. We all have to be part of this. And these are legal techniques called impleading, which you don't really need to worry about, but that's how we're all brought in. So what does the court say about using the
criminal imaging device? Well, as with most things with me, it's not as important what I'm saying as what I'm doing.
Why not?
So these are the table reports. Oh,
okay.
Well, so this you should probably hear.
Like
this group was
it's
doing
like a grocery
part of the Fourth Amendment, and they were working
and
on
the
a new.
Timeline,
okay, well, hold
way.
On. So there's the whiteboard. Use it as a essentially as a chalkboard. But one of the great things about the whiteboard is that I can save the pages and then post
and
them to our course website,
which
I do.
And
so that makes it incredibly useful. Because otherwise, you obviously can't
is
do that with just traditional
him.
Chalkboards.
And yet, there's this clause
see,
at the
David's
top
the
that is typed indicates
to
you
figure out the
that he might not have read it. What else?
That wasn't sure.
Oh, that's smart too.
Okay.
See, I don't know these things.
Couldn't
well, I can tell
it.
So
it
the table report. One of the great things about the classroom and the fact that each student has their own table. That table was doing a Fourth Amendment issue, and it was a U.S. Supreme Court case that came down last year about using thermal imaging devices to detect heat on the outside of a house to see whether someone has lamps that they use to grow pot. And the issue is using the thermal imaging device. Oh, sure.
Country, we have this thing called the single recovery theory. The single recovery theory, which means we all have to bring this in one lawsuit. We all have to be part of this. And these are legal techniques called impleading, which you don't really need to worry about, but that's how we're all brought in. So what does the court say about using the thermal imaging device?
He didn't have a reasonable expectation of privacy for the heat coming out of his house.
Why not?
He didn't try to conceal it.
Okay, oh, look, see, it is sort of like a ray gun.
We didn't know
it's
what
like
they look like.
It's like a grocery scanner.
And so I asked them, why don't you show me what they look like? And they were able to, you know, instantly pull it up so we could all see it, and it looks like a big grocery scanner. FYI.
We're talking 5 years. But that includes the appeal. But it's a long, long time. And again, if I had a chalkboard, I would make the line the whole length of the chalkboard. To be dramatic, number one, and number two, to impress upon you how long it takes. The fact that his confession is handwritten and signed by him, and yet there's this clause at the top that is typed, indicates to you that he might not have read it. What else?
That I wasn't sure that he didn't know his rights.
Okay.
And he cannot understand.
Couldn't understand it. It indicates to me that it was added after the fact. That it was put
their table report, thanks, David. Always my tech support. Their table report was on Miranda, Arizona versus Miranda. So these have been fantastic, and I'll talk about the work required for them in a second. So obviously there was a lot of work clearly that went into adapting this class, but I worked very closely with Becky, who, like I said, gave me the sort of kernels, the ideas. And then once I understood the ideas, it was very easy to apply to my class. So the change in mindset, like I said earlier, required me to think of myself not as a lecturer who kind of spoon feeds the students the material, but as a facilitator. And that was not that easy to sort of overcome that, but once I got the hang of it, it really is fantastic. It does require a lot of upfront work. So when you approach your faculty and they might have some reluctance to do this, it does require upfront work. But once the upfront work is done, when you get to class, it's incredibly rewarding to see it all play out. So the upfront work was shared by me with Becky. But, you know, I had to go over these assignments. I had to make sure that what I wanted to do, number one, would actually work, because that's helpful. But number two, that the students actually felt like they were moving forward on the syllabus, that we weren't just sort of stopping and fooling around and, you know, looking something up, that they could actually see that it was relevant to class and that we were moving forward. And so those Fourth and Fifth Amendment ideas, I thought, really worked very well in class. They could see that we were moving forward. They could see that we were going much more in depth. That information was not in the textbook. We were going much more in depth than even the required text laid out. And then we got not just inside class activities, outside of class activities. And again, Becky and I put our heads together to come up with these table reports. Each group, and table one is doing their report, you can see on Andrea Yates, we were discussing insanity, the insanity defense. The students with the in-class reports and with the out-class report, out-of-class reports, are participating in the teaching. I'm there to make sure they don't go totally wacko and give students wrong information, but they're participating in the teaching, and because of the setup of the room, it's really easy for them to do that. They can push their slides to every computer. I usually make them stand up so they have everyone's undivided attention. But for follow-up questions, they don't have to. And they have to do what seems now sort of a prehistoric PowerPoint presentation, but they have to embed video. They have to access the video either through their slide or using the technology in the classroom. And with some of the in-class reports, like the Fourth and Fifth Amendment in-class activities, I sit there and essentially take dictation, and we build the slides right there in class, which is another really great tool for them to feel that they're participating in the learning, and that they sort of own the learning, and they, you'll hear from David, hopefully retain it better. And the Andrea Yates presentation was really great. The other use of technology that Becky helped me develop is using blogs. And this is on our SMG Tools course management software, which I'm sure most of your institutions have, either Blackboard or some other version of it. And this can be done on Blackboard also. We created blogs, and as I pointed out in the introduction about recalibrating the deliverables, Becky had a wonderful idea, of course, of making the blog part of their grade, but not just having them summarize it, make them continue the learning in the blog. So we decided that every student had to post a blog once, and then every student had to respond to a blog once. And that has worked out. You can see here, this is just a screenshot. I don't know if this is this semester or last semester, but not even midway through. It's an incredibly active space for them. I have been impressed routinely with three things. Number one, how many students participate. More than the required students participate. They love the blog. It continues the interesting conversations outside of the classroom. I have to do a better job of bringing it back in. I remember to do it sporadically. I have to become more disciplined about bringing that conversation back into the classroom, because it kind of brings it full circle and brings it back to the classroom for them, but I have to do a better job of that. So I've been impressed with the number of participants. Every single blog post has more than just one responder. So I know that more than just the assigned kids are posting and responding. The second thing I've been impressed with is the level of analysis. They're required to summarize, the posters are, summarize the article, which can be no more than 2 weeks old, but they're also required to post 2 to 3 thought-provoking questions that go further into the conversation, and the responder has to answer those questions. And that level of analysis has really impressed me also. And then the last thing that I've been impressed with, I require them to include the citation of the article that they're summarizing. Every poster and most responders have more than one citation, which says to me the student reads the article, but then they do more research on their own, which is exactly the point of the blog and Becky's, you know, genius idea to continue the learning. So they do more than just summarize the article. They go usually 1 or 2 levels deeper with more articles about what this means, what the context is, and frequently many responders do the same thing. So it's been really great, and I've gotten good feedback not only on the blog, but on bringing it back into the classroom. So I must do a better job of doing that. So I wanted to introduce David Ryson. As David pointed out, he was my tech support in my digital studio, LA245, but he also has the unique perspective of he took the class in the traditional format also. And so we leave it turn to David to talk about the student response to all of this technology.
Thank you, Cabrina. Professor Chang. So I want to start off with a little experiment that'll hopefully prove a point. So if I could get everyone involved in that just quick 30-second experiment, that would be great. If you got enough sleep and are paying attention right now, could you please raise your hand for me? So if you're paying attention, could you all just raise your hand? Perfect. Now, if you were, put your hand down. If you weren't paying attention beforehand, but raised your hand when I tried to get your attention and engaged you, put your hand back up. No one's going to judge you if you weren't paying attention as we were switching. Everyone was paying attention to Cabrina, but as we were switching, if we lost your attention, raise your hand for me, and then I got it back. So a handful of you. And that's the first point that I want to prove as the difference between a traditional classroom lecture style and a class taught in this studio classroom is it's much more engaging. It's very easy to drift off onto your iPad, your laptop, or just into sleep when you're in a traditional lecture style classroom. I'd be willing to say that 100% of students, at least once during a semester, and I'd be willing to say a lot more than once, didn't get enough sleep the night before and will fall asleep in a morning lecture, or are getting burnt out towards the end of a day during an afternoon lecture. So I know not everyone here is faculty, but perhaps you've worked with a faculty that have expressed this as a concern. And I feel like in this classroom, it kind of solves that issue. Working in a table setting forces you to look right at your peers and work side by side with them, which makes it a little bit more awkward to fall asleep. And also you're much less likely to go onto Facebook and text and talk to your peers when you're surrounding the teacher. And so the proximity to the professor is always kind of equidistant, I should say, from each table, as opposed to, I'm sure we all have students or know students that purposely sit in the back row of a classroom so that they can drift off into nap time or use Facebook or watch. I have a couple friends that watch NBA games instead of paying attention to the lectures. So that's the first point that I want to make is that, I never went to the right slide, is that engagement is much more effective and you're much more capable of keeping your students' attention when you're presenting in this studio classroom setting. The next thing that I want to talk about is the retention of course material. Because you're learning hands-on and doing the research in the classroom, with the professor as a facilitator, you're much more likely to remember the information. So one of the required courses for business students in the School of Management is called Organizational Behavior. And one lecture we talk upon the different types of learners and the different effectivenesses of learning. So one main thing that we talk about is how you only really remember 10 to 30% of what you see and hear, which is what a traditional classroom lecture setting provides. Whereas when you're researching, you're more likely, and learning hands-on, you're more likely to remember the majority of what you've just researched. Furthermore, when you're actually presenting, such as with the table presentations, and teaching the classroom what you've just learned, you're more likely to remember the majority of what you've just learned. So it takes the classroom from this sort of let me listen to the professor, forget most of it, cram the night before an exam, regurgitate it on a piece of paper, and then forget it again, and takes it into this sort of experiential learning model, which has been proven more effective, where you're learning throughout the semester, you're retaining more throughout the semester, and reviewing is exactly that. It's reviewing. It's not cramming the night before an exam. And you're more likely to take away from that all the material from the class, you know, throughout your experience within the School of Management and also when you start your career as a professional. Third, I want to talk about the control of content. As you saw with the heat seeker laser pointer thing, the students are able to find things that the professor may not have known about or wouldn't have touched upon otherwise. So while Professor Chang is there to make sure that all of the information is accurate, the students can still present new information that wouldn't have been presented otherwise. Either it's more relevant and newer to a particular amendment to the Constitution, or it's just a fact that never came up before, especially with the blog posts. When you have 30 different students doing research, it's much more effective than one person doing the research and preparing it for class. Finally, I find that the pacing of the material is different for the better. And again, this goes back to the retention of the material. Because you're going and doing your own research, you're not able to cover as much breadth. You're not able to cover as many topics. But the topics that you do cover, you get to go into much more detail with. And because of that, you're able to have your students, again, retain much more of the information. So the last thing that I want to talk about is one of the things that the School of Management is known for. So while these four things are absolutely amazing, they're great for the students, one of the best things that the School of Management does well that has consistently ranked us as one of the best business schools, and recently this year we were ranked one of the most employable schools in the country, I think in the top 10 we were number 7 or 8, is that we do team learning effectively. We teach our students how to build teams. And this sort of collaboration style classroom allows us to further build on that. So whereas we already did this team collaboration well, we found that 72% of students either agree or strongly agree that this type of classroom setting allowed us to do team learning even better. It allowed us to take something that we were already doing well and take it to the next level. And only 9% of students had disagreed with the statement that that this improved the way that the classroom was being run. So now I'm going to pass this over back to Cabrina, who's going to talk a little bit more about some of the surveys that we did on the students mid-semester and at the end of the semester. Cabrina?
Thank you. So these were surveys that, of course, Becky helped me with. I can't get through the day without Becky, obviously. These were taken, I started in the high-tech studio last semester, so in September. So Becky came up with some tech questions to ask them in addition to a mid-semester evaluation that I do anyway for pedagogical reasons. We tacked on some technology questions. And as David said, the overwhelming majority really enjoyed the use of technology. They thought that it increased the team atmosphere, that miraculously I was able to use it in conjunction with the lecture, but didn't dominate the lecture, which I was glad to hear because it was so foreign to me that I thought all of it was dominating everything, but I'm glad to see that it wasn't. It really, I don't ever want to go back to a regular classroom. I'm in the studio and a regular classroom this semester, and I walk into the regular classroom going, oh, prehistoric, because I really enjoy the new one. The other thing that I forgot to mention was that the in-class assignments, research assignments, I try to do one of them a week. I don't really get to one a week, maybe one every other week. One of the issues, and David mentioned a lot of it, the control, the retention, and the pacing, is that you don't cover as much material. So while I have, 15 weeks of wonderful, thought-provoking, engaging chapters, we're not going to get to everything. It takes more time to let them sort of loose and do their own research than it would for me to sit there and do a traditional lecture. And I think that's just fine. I'm still giving them what they need to be good managers and productive citizens and everything else. But again, when you're working with your faculty, beware that that might be one other stumbling block for faculty. But it just requires us to do more work sort of streamlining what we deliver and what our learning objectives are. And most faculty do that anyway, so it's not going to be terribly difficult, I don't think. I hope not. I was worried about it last semester. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to get to fair use, and, I got over it, number one. And number two, it just required me to reorganize a few things. We do have some challenges. As David pointed out, the room layout is a little weird. It takes some getting used to. Because I walk up and down the middle, at no point will everyone be able to see me. And because I use the big board in front, everyone whose back is to the front has to turn around. And Becky and I were discussing this, different faculty have different ways of adjusting for that. My way is I force them to look at the big board for the first half of the semester, and that's sort of my old vestige of, I like them to look at me. I like eye contact. I like engaging. I like to have a normal human conversation with these students, which requires eye contact. Last semester, some of the feedback I got on Becky's questions were, can we please, please, please use our small screens? I'm sick of turning around. And I thought, well, after the midterm, yeah, I'll let you use your small screens because now I've had a half a semester to develop a relationship. We know each other's names. You know, I know what to expect. You know what to expect. So I turn on the small screens so they can see my slides on all of their small screens. The other comment I got that, two other comments that I got, the technology learning curve. There is some time involved in the classroom, getting all the technology to work and setting it all up. And that's why I have David, and my tech consultant this semester is a man named Tommy, and of course they're geniuses. But I don't give them a heads up. I say, oh my gosh, wait, I'm supposed to turn on this video. Can you turn on the video? So that can be a little bit cumbersome, but it just takes practice to get over it. And you guys are the experts, so I'm sure you can make it incredibly smooth for faculty. The other thing, the course structure. I didn't realize, because of the team building, I always think the students know each other, and it turns out they actually don't. So while they work great with the students at their table, some of the feedback I got was, can we please work with people at other tables? We have no conversations with anyone other than the people at our table. So I decided for two in-class presentations, I would split up the tables, and I sort of did it summer camp style, where every person, you know, called off 1, 2, 3, 4, and I made all the ones get together and the twos get together. And it really just switched it up, gave them something different, again, more engaging, just things to kind of change it up a little bit so no one falls asleep and people become more excited about it. And it really can only be done very well in this classroom with this technology. So there are some challenges. Here are some visibility challenges. You can see the kids all kind of craning. And, you know, there's nothing I can do. They do have the stuff on their screen, so I must be saying something totally engrossing for them to tear themselves away. It has been, you know, seeing in front of the board is a little bit awkward. You know, it takes some time using the technology. But you can see, despite this, the vast majority thought that it was a great experience. And I loved it, and I don't want to go back. Like I said, requiring me to redevelop and rethink my curriculum, but that's where I worked with Becky and where you can work really side by side with your faculty to come up with the genius ideas that you guys have that I don't, about delivery. We do have lots of goals for the future, and I'll quickly say mine. I want to do more in-class presentations, and this semester is the first time I'm going to utilize our enormous teleconferencing capability and have a couple of alumni who are working on IPOs to teleconference into the class, so when we talk about securities, we can talk about how IPOs actually work instead of me telling them, this is how I think they work. And it pulls in alumni, which is a great thing also. But I'll turn it back over to Becky because she has the challenges that you guys might identify with better.
Thank you. So I have a couple goals as well. Every semester we get a new batch of faculty in the room, so every semester I'm training a new batch of faculty to teach in the room. So I'm hoping to continue working with more faculty that way. Cabrina's been in there for two semesters now, so she's a pro, knows exactly what she's doing. But that leads into my second goal, which is helping faculty become less dependent on student help. We do have a student tech worker in the classroom for every class with the faculty. That's where David came in, and Cabrina has Tommy this semester. My goal is eventually to have the faculty comfortable enough using the technology that we don't need a student employee in there the whole time. And they are becoming that way. I was in, for Cabrina, part of your class last semester, and then you kicked me out halfway through. So I don't need you, and kicked me to the curb. And I'm hoping to see that with more faculty. There are a couple lessons that we learned that I want to go over really quickly, and then we'll open up for time for questions. The first one, I think this is the most important one, is technology really should be used to enhance the pedagogy rather than define the pedagogy. When I was working with Cabrina, I wanted to make sure, I know she's not going to be in this classroom every time that she teaches, and she's not teaching everything in this classroom, so I don't want to encourage her to do something that is dependent on being in that classroom. I want her to take those ideas and be able to translate them to a standard classroom. And it's easier to collaborate in this classroom, but you can still do it a little clunky in a standard room. But I don't want her to spend the time rewriting her syllabus and redeveloping her curriculum, then to have to change it all the way back the next semester when she's not in the room. So that was a big lesson for us. Flexibility and experimentation are key. Cabrina is fantastic to work with. She's so open to anything. She's very flexible. She doesn't mind taking risks. What's the worst that could happen, she says. And that's been really key for me and really lucky, I think. Not everybody is like that. And some faculty who are, and some people, this is the way it goes, you know. You've taught the same thing over and over for 20 years. You're used to teaching it that way. You know how, what will happen if you teach it that way. And you like that. And that's understandable. And some people are a little less risk averse and so a little less inclined to change. But it, to teach in this room, it's nice to be flexible and nice to be able to be willing to experiment. And then the third one is that we shouldn't assume that students know all about the technology or that they're comfortable using all of the technology. They do know a lot about it, but they are also still used to being in a standard lecture room and having somebody speak to them. So we've been seeing this in some of our student feedback too, where they like that they're creating their own learning, but it also kind of challenges them and makes them a little bit uncomfortable at first. And some of that is because of the new technology that they're not used to, and I think some of that is because of the curricular changes. And then that's it for us. Thank you so much for coming to our presentation. Thank you to the tech support. And then we're happy to answer any questions that you might have for us. Sure. Can you come up and stand to the microphone? Oh, that was the other thing I was supposed to say. We have an online audience, so if you could have a, if you have a question, please speak into the microphone.
Are the computers permanent?
Yeah,
they're not. Yeah. Group table? Because we have a team-based learning classroom at UMass, and the computers are standard. And
Yeah. Right now they're mounted onto the wall, and so the tables are fixed into place, and the computers are fixed into place. We have kind of a love-hate relationship with that. I think moving forward, I think I would advocate for having everything be more mobile and having the computers be mobile and having the tables be mobile. The chairs right now have wheels on them, but that's the only thing that's mobile in the classroom. But it would be nice if we could move the tables and the computers around to really configure the classroom however we wanted it for any particular class.
Hi, Becky. What's your title? What's your background? And where do we find people like you?
She's not up.
I didn't say
she loves her job.
People like her is what I said. Yes.
She's not available.
My title is I'm a curriculum technology manager, which is similar to an instructional technologist or an educational technologist. My background actually is in archaeology. I'm a trained archaeologist, which is nowhere near here. But I was getting a degree, a graduate degree in archaeology, and I started teaching that way, and then I got really interested in education and curriculum and learning how to teach, because no one teaches you how to teach when you're getting a PhD, and they assume that once you know the content, you will then be able to teach it to people, and I found that that wasn't true for me, and so that stoked my interest in education, and then I got a degree in education, and I've been working in instructional technology. I would say where to find people like me. I'm housed in the IT department at the School of Management. The university also has a Center for Excellence and Innovation in Teaching. A lot of universities will have some sort of teaching center where you might be able to find some support there.
Hi, this is a really inspiring model. One of the concerns that I would have would be the scalability of something like this. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to what the cost of doing the room was, as well as the availability of students who have the kind of magical technical skills that we've heard about here, because while it could work for one room, I could easily imagine that you couldn't set up one of these rooms very often from a budgetary standpoint.
Right, and that's a great question. I forgot to mention when I was talking about the room itself cost about $1 million, and part of that was because we built it over 30 days. So it was built over the intersession period from fall semester to spring semester. So it was a lot of crunch. And that was last year, actually, last winter, before I started at BU. But it was the 30-day, and so that's partly why it was so expensive. But you're right that it is a very expensive proposition. And that gets into one of the takeaways that I put up with there, where I think you can do a lot of the things that we're doing in that room. I think you can do it in a standard classroom. And I think that you can take a lot of those activities. You can take the group work activities. You can take the outside of class activities, and you can do that in a low-tech classroom. Students have a lot of mobile devices. You can encourage that, have students do things on their iPhones or iPads or laptops or whatever they have. And you can adapt a lot of the curricular changes to a less expensive classroom. Because I agree, you know, $1 million for a classroom is not everybody has that. We certainly don't have that either, you know. We can't do that to all of our rooms. But I think that it can be done in a less high-tech environment as well.
Great. Hi. Great presentation. Thank you. I'm in a similar academic technology group at Tufts, and when we work with faculty, I wanted to pull on one of your last points, which was, students don't necessarily thank you, at least initially, for a more engaged pedagogical approach. In some ways, it's easier to sit and listen to a lecture, even if you don't actually learn very much. So I'm curious, I think probably being in a different kind of room is helpful to signal, like, this is a different thing, especially for folks who are trying to make this change without a different kind of room. Did you do any particular kind of resistance neutralization strategies or any special things?
David and I were just talking about this as we were having coffee outside. Last semester, I gave you my background, which is nothing in technology. So last semester, I felt like a complete fish out of water. And so I was very upfront with my students. I said, listen, this whole room is new. They're new to the room. There's only one room, and, you know, there are thousands of students. So I'm new to the room. You're new to the room. I have never used PowerPoint before. So let's see how this goes this semester. And I was just really upfront with them and honest, and David was there. And I think they appreciated the honesty. The feedback was great. I mean, not just that they liked it, because that's always nice too, but they had a lot of constructive stuff. The thing about mixing up the tables never occurred to me. The thing about putting on the small screens, I was adamantly opposed all semester, and then I thought, well, all right. I was just upfront with them. And this semester, I didn't say I've never done this before, because I had done it. But, you know, I'm still very new at it. But they are too. And so I haven't found any, I hate this, I hate you. My course teacher evaluations have not gone down the toilet. There's been no dip. I'm still working for them to go higher, but it has been welcome. It's been welcome.
If I may add, as far as any resistance is concerned, I feel like one thing that we're blessed with in the school is that it is so team-based from freshman year, from the very first week. But I feel like even if Tufts may not have that sort of team-centered learning approach with their school, that as long as there's that pre-work that we discussed earlier, that it doesn't really feel like they're working harder. They're working differently, and again, there's that learning curve for them to get used to that different type of learning, but it's by no means harder. Researching on Google is something that they've done for a million classes before. Hanging out with friends is something they've done with before, and I feel like a lot of students, and I have a biased view of this just coming from my school and not seeing it in other schools, but I feel like the resistance is less than it might seem there would be.
And I would add scaffolding in the use of technology. So I try to advocate when professors are teaching in the first day, you know, do a small assignment in the room to kind of show some of the capabilities of it and give them an idea of what they'll be doing for the rest of the semester. And just the way that you would scaffold an assignment, a large writing assignment, you could scaffold using or learning in that different way. I think we have time for one more question. So you're lucky.
Thank you. This is actually a question for Cabrina, mostly. I'm an instructional technologist over at Emerson College up in Boston. And when you were talking about having a hard time wrapping your brain around, like, how to use the technology, I find myself having to learn the material that the professors are trying to teach, because I don't know that field. And so do you have any advice for technologists to try and get in, like, help you imagine how to use your
field? Yeah, that's a great question, because that was my big stumbling block. I had no idea how all of Becky's great ideas actually could work for me. So I would say, well, one advice, and I got a ton of heat from my husband for doing this, but I gave her that assignment, and I just chose a chapter from the book and made her do it. And, you know, what I didn't know what else to do, because I couldn't see it. I could not make the connection. And Becky, I won't speak for you, but she didn't need to totally understand it. But she needed to have a good handle on it. So I hate to say this to you, but that might be one way of doing it. Also, we had lots of conversations. And just like you get to know someone, We spent a lot of time getting to know each other, and I didn't really know what she could do for me, and I know she had no idea what I did, you know, the substance of what I did. So conversations about what you do, it's not, I don't think it's something that you'll be able to say, come meet with me over lunch and we'll bang out a couple of assignments. I don't think it's going to be like that. I think the conversation has to start weeks in advance so you can kind of feel and understand what they do and vice versa. So when Becky came back to me with these five projects, and they were, some of them were about IPOs, some of them were about insider trading, I could immediately see how this would apply to different topics in my classroom. So it's got to be kind of a relationship, which is a lot of work, I get, and you're very busy, and I get that also, but it's a lot of upfront work. But once the model's in place, it's so much easier going forward being able to duplicate that.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.